This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
You're going to love this. Just love it. Yes, I do.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Never is.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
I'm never scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
Stuck in the middle with you once again here on KPFK. Good afternoon, it's Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com in for the next 30 minutes, exploding across 110,000 watts of terrestrial airwaves on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 Ridgecrest in China Lake. And oh, don't forget, coast to coast and around the globe on KPFK.org. Glad you could join us this afternoon for the fastest 30 minutes in broadcasting. Well, as it turns out, he did have inappropriate sexual entanglements with women. And yes, he lied about it to the American people. And I don't know about you, but I personally am outraged that no one is calling for the resignation of Justice Clarence Thomas. I don't get it. Because, you know, unlike Congressman Anthony Weiner, Justice Thomas actually appears to have broken the law time and again over the last 20 years, over the last two decades. And yet, where are the hooting and the hollerings for Justice Thomas to step down? Well, we're going to be hooting and hollering about it a little bit today. Because, you know, as it turns out, last Friday, as this stupid, idiotic Congressman Weiner story broke, what was Anthony Weiner working on? Well, he was trying to get out the information about Justice Thomas, his conflicts of interest, and the disclosure forms that we found that were just released as of last Friday, the same day that, you know, Anthony Weiner suddenly got famous. The disclosure forms from Clarence Thomas for 2010, which seem to suggest what some are now calling a case of judicial insider trading. We will get to that in a moment. And we'll be talking with Kevin Zeis from ProtectOurElections.org about that, about the latest in the Clarence Thomas case that you did not hear about. Because the media, the corporate mainstream media in America is out. Imagine if they had this same interest, this same skepticism, this same incredulousness, if they had devoted this much time to determining whether, oh, I don't know, the president of the United States had lied about WMD before 5,000 American kids were sent to their death in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. What else have you not heard about this week, thanks to this Weiner nonsense? Well, you listen to KPFK, so maybe you have heard it. But the rest of America has no idea that, last Friday on that same day, we learned that radiation levels at the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1 nuclear plant are now higher, at the highest level, since the March 11 disaster, according to Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO. They have also now admitted that all three, units 1, 2, and 3, units had what appears to be a meltdown, that the container vessel for the fissile material, they believe has holes in it, is leaking. And that certainly seems to be the case in unit number 1, where, as I said, the radiation levels are higher than they have ever been. Did you hear about that? Or did you hear about some jackass in his gray underwear? On Monday, What else didn't you hear? Oh, 5 U.S. soldiers were killed in Iraq. I realize that's not as important as Anthony Weiner, but yes, 5 U.S. soldiers were killed in Iraq, not in Afghanistan, but in Iraq. That brings the total of U.S. troops killed in Iraq to 4,459. Meanwhile, over in Afghanistan, 1,610 have died. We are still trying to figure out why the hell we are in either of those wars at this hour. That is more than 6,069 U.S. troops killed in these two dishonestly begun wars. Man, and of course that doesn't take into account the number of U.S. contractors, the number of foreign troops, and the untold hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of citizens killed in both of those countries for reasons that fail me, but are apparently not as important as what Anthony Weiner does on Twitter in his free time. What else didn't you hear about? It was election day in a few different places around the country yesterday. One of those places was Las Vegas, where mayoral candidate Carolyn Goodman, the wife of Mayor Oscar Goodman out there in Las Vegas, she's running for mayor, and she went to vote for herself yesterday on a 100% unverifiable Sequoia ABC Edge touchscreen voting machine. Good for her 100% unverifiable vote cast on voting machines that were illegally cast, were illegally certified in the state of Nevada by then Secretary of State Dean Heller, now U.S. Senator Dean Heller. You can read all about how those were illegally certified in the book Loser Take All, where I, with Michael Richardson, contributed an investigative expose detailing just how Dean Heller illegally certified those touchscreen voting machines in 2004. But it took two tries yesterday for Carolyn Goodman to vote for herself. According to the Las Vegas Sun, when Goodman pushed the button next to her name on a voting machine at the Public Administration Building downtown, Chris Guncigliani's name popped up. That's her opponent. She says, "I touched my name and strangely ended up with my opponent," a visibly worried Goodman said from her voting booth. She pushed the second button a second time and successfully then voted for herself. At least she thinks she voted for herself. As I said, these are 100% unverifiable voting machines. We have no idea if her vote was actually recorded for herself, just like the voting machines used across the country by 20 to 30% of American voters. And that will be the case next year when we begin the presidential election cycle. 20 to 30% of the votes that are cast in the primaries, the Republican primaries, and in the general election will be cast on 100% unverifiable e-voting systems. Swell, huh? I suspect we'll have plenty to talk about. Of course, Carolyn Goodman's not the first famous person to have had this problem occur to her. As we reported back in 2008, just before the presidential election, during early voting in Chicago, Oprah Winfrey almost lost her vote for president. Have no idea who she might have been voting for. You can read about that at bradblog.com. When she was also voting on a Sequoia touchscreen voting machine, she got to the final page, and what do you know, her vote for president suddenly wasn't there. She panicked, backed up, and was able to theoretically cast her vote, theoretically, for Barack Obama. Then on Sequoia touchscreen voting machines, New Jersey Governor John Corzine was also unable to vote for himself in the 2008 February Super Tuesday primary out there in New Jersey, in Hoboken, where he went to vote, but couldn't because the touchscreen voting machines wouldn't boot up at all for 45 minutes. Disenfranchising all of those folks who don't have 45 minutes in the morning when the polls open to stand around and wait for voting machines to work or not work. My friend, election integrity filmmaker Patricia Earnhardt, the executive producer of the award-winning 2006 documentary Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections, which, yes, deals with the dangers of using 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. She saw her own vote flipped on an ES&S Ivotronic touchscreen in Nashville, Davidson County, Tennessee, in 2008 in the general election. And, of course, you can read more about this at bradblog.com, where you can also learn about poor Randy Wooten, the mayoral candidate of Waldenburg, Arkansas, in 2006. Little tiny town in Poinsett County with a population of just over 80 people. And that year, he was stunned to learn after the polls closed that poor Randy Wooten had received 0 votes for mayor. That, despite the fact that he and his wife voted for him, presumably. As AP noted at the time, Wooten said, "I had at least 8 or 9 people who said they voted for me, so something is wrong with this picture. Oh, do you think, Randy?" Randy might have known that, of course, had he been reading the Brad blog back in 2006 during the Republican primary, when the conservative former state Supreme Court Justice Steve Smith was once again up for election, and he had a similar problem. Out in Winkler County, a town that he had won by 74% in 2002, that he had won by 65% in 2004, poor Steve Smith in the Republican primary election in 2006 lost Winkler County by 100%. He received 0 votes. That's our democracy at work, folks. Oh, and in that same election, by the way, where 0 votes were registered for this fellow in Winkler County, another 100,000 phantom votes appeared in Tarrant County. That's Fort Worth, Texas, in that same election. How they decided to remove which 100,000 votes remains a mystery, the mystery of democracy. You can check out more on this story on Carolyn Goodman and her difficulties voting for herself for mayor in Las Vegas at bradblog.com, where I took the opportunity to rerun a chart that was published by Washington Post back in 2006 comparing just how the slot machines in Las Vegas, since Goodman was in Las Vegas running for mayor there, comparing how the slot machines in Vegas are regulated compared to the electronic voting machines in Vegas and in everywhere else. Here's just a couple of items from that chart. In Vegas, the state of Nevada has access to all software, and it's illegal to use software that is not on file. Meanwhile, the electronic voting machines, the software is a trade secret. How about spot checks? Well, in Vegas, state gambling inspectors show up unannounced at casinos, compare computer chips with those on file, and if there's a discrepancy, the machine is shut down and investigated. Meanwhile, with our voting machines, no checks are required. Election officials have no chip to compare with the one found in the machine. I could go on, but you get the idea. Plus, they only give me 30 minutes here, so we have a lot we have to get to. Go check out that story at bradblog.com. All right, judicial insider trading of Clarence Thomas says protectourelections.org, which is a campaign of velvetrevolution.us. And since, unlike Clarence Thomas, I believe in disclosure, so I will disclose the fact that I am the co-founder of VelvetRevolution.us. At least BradBlog.com is the co-founder. So there's my disclosure. As to Clarence Thomas, we can't say the same thing about him. Earlier this year, we discovered that for the last 20 years, he has not been reporting income that has been received by his wife on his disclosure form. His wife has been getting upwards of $700,000 from a right-wing think tank known as the Heritage Foundation up through 2009. Clarence Thomas didn't think that was worthy to note on his disclosure form, despite the fact that the Heritage Foundation surely had a stake in cases that came before the court over these past 20 years. When this was disclosed by Common Cause originally, Clarence Thomas very quickly went and filed a self-initiated amendment to those forms to include Ginny Thomas's salary from those organizations. However, the deed was done, and he got away with it. And by the way, on those disclosure forms, Clarence Thomas signed them right above the note in all caps that says, "Note, any individual who knowingly and willfully falsifies or fails to file this report may be subject to civil and criminal sanctions as per 5 U.S.C. Section 104. Of course, that's legalese, and who knows if Clarence Thomas can understand that highfalutin legal stuff. But, 5 U.S.C., for each of these instances, he could be forced to pay $50,000. He could be imprisoned for not more than 1 year, and other criminal penalties that no one seems to give a damn about. No one other than me, Velvet Revolution, Common Cause, .org, and of course, Anthony Weiner, who had been trying to get out the word about this. He had actually set up a website called ConflictedThomas.com, where you can still go. Well, we got new information now. Clarence Thomas's disclosure forms for 2010 have now been released. On Friday, I think they were released. Well, let's go straight to Kevin Zeese here and get the word on what we have now learned in these new disclosure forms that no one in the corporate media is talking about at all. Kevin Zeese is the attorney and spokesperson for Velvet Revolution's ProtectOurElections.org campaign, and he joins us now. Hey, Kevin, welcome to KPFK, sir.
Voice, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here, my friend. Now, let's go right to it. What do we learn? I've got these disclosure forms in my hand, 7 pages, a very simple form, not hard to figure out. It's amazing that...
It's an absolutely simple form.
Yeah.
The question about his wife's income is very clear, and so his failure to file that information, include that information in 20 years of filings, it can't be an oversight. It was an intentional act on his part and really undermined litigants who should know what his conflicts of interest are, so they can ask him to recuse himself, and he should have recused himself in many cases where the Heritage Foundation had issues that were being dealt with by the court. And what we found out in this current disclosure form are really two critical facts. First, Clarence Thomas invested in a company that his wife was involved with that was essentially a Tea Party advocacy group called Liberty Consulting and Liberty Central, which later became Liberty Consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And he invested up to $15,000. We don't know the exact amount. And what we also know is that his wife profited from this. She raised $550,000.
She raised, by the way, $550,000 in 2009 alone.
Right.
We don't yet know how much she made in 2010 because she hasn't disclosed that.
That's right, and these two groups that she was involved with, Liberty Central, Liberty Consulting, have not filed their 2010 tax return yet, so we don't know the details. So we do know she received income from that because he discloses that she received income. He doesn't say how much, and so we know that she was involved in the Tea Party movement. He was investing in it, and she was profiting from it. And what's really interesting about the disclosures is that these Liberty groups specifically went after corporate donors. They were prepared to do so before the Citizens United decision,
mm-hmm.
and they immediately jumped into action, going for the corporate donors that were suddenly legalized by Citizens United by Clarence Thomas's fifth vote, the 5-4 decision. And so we're calling it judicial insider trading because it seems pretty evident from the timeline of these events that Thomas and his wife, intentionally profited from this 5-4 decision that allowed corporations to give as much money as they want to election activities.
And let me run through that. And of course, we give great credit to Clarence Thomas for this time bothering to disclose his wife's income at all on this form, which you can get at protectourelections.org. You can see how he filled it out. And of course, he notes that he received under the section Spouses Non-Investment Income, he lists Liberty Central, Inc., Salary and Benefits, and Liberty Consulting, Inc., Salary and Benefits. It does not require them to post the amount of money, so we don't know that yet for 2010. We do have some numbers, however, for 2009 via Liberty Central's 501c4 forms from 2009. And let me, Kevin, run through just the first few bullet points on this timeline to underscore this case that you're making for judicial insider trading. And boy, it sure does look like it. September 9, 2009, the Citizens United case is argued before the Supreme Court. On November 6th, Just a few weeks later, Virginia Thomas launches her new Liberty Central 501c4 organization and manages somehow between November and the end of the year to raise $550,000 in 2009. Then comes January 2010, Citizens United is decided. And by March of 2010, Ginny Thomas announces that Liberty Central would, quote, accept donations from various sources, including corporations, as allowed under campaign finance rules recently loosened by the Supreme Court. To her credit, she doesn't say by my husband's deciding vote. But there you go. Then there was later in the year, she announces she's shutting down Liberty Central, or that she's leaving the organization and setting up a consulting business, Liberty Consulting, by the end of the year. And that sort of kind of brings us up to where we are. But before we get to there, Kevin Zeis, is the ProtectOurElections.org campaign suggesting that Ginny Thomas actually set up this Tea Party organization, knowing what the decision was going to be in Citizens United and knowing that she stood to profit by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars?
What we're saying is that this deserves an investigation, that the timeline, the actions of Justice Thomas and his wife are enough evidence to go forward and investigate this and find out, was there judicial insider trading? And I just would add one thing to the whole story, which I think is very important, that you didn't mention, which is that when Justice Thomas was nominated, it was a very controversial nomination, and it was not an easy nomination fight for him.
Yes, and, 1991.
Yeah. A critical turning point moment was when Citizens United, the organization, invested $100,000 into an advertising campaign that attacked senators who were criticizing Justice Thomas. And so what that, you know, and that advertising campaign was $100,000, but Time Magazine and other, sources report that, what happened was that that campaign got a lot of free publicity, probably $1 million worth of free publicity. So that was a turning point moment in the decision, to let Thomas on the court. And then, of course, 20 years later, Thomas is the fifth vote in deciding the critical decision. And he didn't mention that. He didn't recuse himself, as he should have. And, in fact, the year before Citizens United, that Supreme Court ruled that in West Virginia, when Massey Energy put a lot of money into getting a Supreme Court judge in the state on their Supreme Court in West Virginia, that and the court ruled in favor of Massey in a one-vote margin, that case had to be sent back and reconsidered, and that judge had to be not involved. So, essentially, Thomas did the same thing. And didn't recuse himself.
So let me just make sure people understand that, because this took me a while to wrap my brains around. We're talking about back in 1991. Citizens United, the organization that was involved in the Supreme Court case, actually existed back in 1991. And they did Clarence Thomas a solid during that fight with Anita Hill and everything else that was going on. They took $100,000 of their own money, Citizens United did, and helped this guy get confirmed by putting out there was attack ads attacking the senators who were threatening to not vote for Clarence Thomas. Is that what those ads were back in 91?
Exactly. And so that was pretty much Citizens United's first major campaign. They didn't really do much before that. So that was kind of the beginning of Citizens United, was to get Thomas as a Supreme Court justice.
20 years later, then, Citizens United comes up before this very court. Now, is there, when we're talking about conflicts of interest and disclosing, is there a statute of limitations? In other words, that was 20 years ago, so he doesn't have to.
There's no statute of limitations. The problem is that there's no review of this. I mean, in other courts, you'd have a review process. I mean, the Supreme Court does it kind of willy-nilly. It's up to the justice to decide, and that's it. And so it's a really lousy situation, and it should be changed. I mean, what people have suggested ideas like you have three appellate court judges who decide recusal issues for the U.S. Supreme Court. That would make a lot of sense. Or you have three Supreme Court justices in a rotating manner making those kind of decisions. So it's not left up to the justice who has the conflict of interest, but left up to other judges who don't or are not involved in that and will decide it.
But on the Supreme Court,
I'll point out that Sonia Sotomayor has recused herself from a lot of cases. I mean, so it's not unusual for Supreme Court justices to recuse themselves. And what's critical is that litigants, need to know what are issues that argue the case, or they can ask for recusal, you know, so they can make an issue of it. And here we have this major case, 5-4, Citizens United. If it was not for Citizens United Foundation, Thomas may not have even gotten the nomination.
And there is no authority. These guys decide this. These justices decide on their own if they're going to recuse themselves. Who would be the authority? I guess Velvet Revolution has now sent a number of letters to the FBI to ask them to investigate it. Do they have the does the FBI have the jurisdiction here to investigate what you're calling judicial insider training?
Yes, they can investigate, you know, the fact that Thomas's wife set up this Liberty group, these two Liberty groups, and did so perhaps from judicial insider training. They can investigate that. They can investigate the financial disclosures if they're to report for 20 years. That's a criminal offense. In fact, Thomas has sit on cases where people have gone to jail for not filling this form out correctly, financial disclosure forms out correctly. So he's actually been a judge who's left people in jail who've done the same thing he did. So that is all stuff the FBI can investigate and the Department of Justice can prosecute, and they should. I mean, if a Supreme Court justice, who is you know among the top lawyers in the country, certainly among the most powerful lawyers in the country, is not obeying the law himself or herself, that is something that deserves to be faced up to. You know, the culture of corruption that we're developing in the United States, in both the court and Congress, and even the White House, is something we need to start fight back on. And it starts with enforcing existing laws. The rule of law should be paramount, and the Attorney General Holder has the power to take this on. And I think if he did, I suspect Justice Thomas would resign.
Oh, the rule of law. How quaint. Kevin Zeese from Velvet Revolutions. ProtectOurElections.org. There are a number of petitions over there that you can sign to help make some noise, to help demand that Eric Holder begin to look into this. So many unanswered questions. I suspect we'll be talking about this in the weeks ahead. You know, was Mrs. Thomas tipped off to the Citizens United decision before it was rendered? Did she launch Liberty Central specifically to take advantage of the Citizens United decision? Oh, man, there's a lot to look into here, but we're busy looking inside. Anthony Weiner's Twitter feed. Kevin, really appreciate it. Kevin Zeese from VelvetRevolution.us. Thank you, sir, for all you do. I suspect we'll be talking to you in the weeks ahead.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, brother. Okay, well, that was short and too short and hopefully not too sweet. We'll be back next week with an extended broadcast, I'm told. 90 minutes. Who knows what we're going to talk about? Maybe we'll even take some calls, get your thoughts on all of these. My thanks to our engineer, G, our producer, Desi. And, of course, stay tuned for, the Wizards are in for John Wiener, a whole different Wiener. Until next week, I'm Brad. See you at bradblog.com.
Good afternoon. This is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and 99.5 Ridgecrest, China Lake.